He brought a smile to my lips. Jealousy on Griffin Eden looked incredibly sexy.
I don't know who you are or what you're doing, but I'm having a conversation with Winnie,
Skylar said, standing taller.
And I'm here to give her an orgasm before dinner. Let's find out which one of us she'd rather have stick around.
My jaw dropped. Emily's gasp was loud enough for us all to hear.
Go home, Emily,
Griffin barked over Skylar's shoulder. She tensed but didn't move.
There's nothing for you here,
Griff told her.
Not a story, not me. Go home.
She swallowed hard, her pride visibly dinged. That might cost us later, but the sight of her scurrying down the sidewalk after he'd chosen me was reward enough. You too, I told Skylar. Go home. He shook his head.
I get it. You wanted to screw this guy for a while and balance the scales. Fine. I can look past him. If you can look past, you lost her.
Griffin's voice had an edge unlike anything I'd heard before, an edge that made me glad I was standing on his side, not the opposing.
You fucked up and lost her. She's mine, and I won't fuck it up.
Mine. My heart melted into a puddle. No man had ever claimed me before. Skylar, dressed in his signature black suit, had taken 8 years, and he'd never once said, "She's mine." My ex looked at me, and I ignored him, too busy holding myself back from hugging the angry cowboy. Griff.
Unlock the door, Wynn.
I fought a smile and followed orders, but before I went inside, I gave Skylar one last glance. Sell the house. Let it go. Let me go. Please. He swallowed hard, then nodded. Thank you. I took Griffin's hand, tugging him into the house. He slammed the door shut, dragging a hand through his hair.
I really want to punch him.
Don't punch him. Skylar didn't wait around this time. As quickly as Emily had vanished, so did he. For good, I suspected. So that was, awkward, incredible, enlightening, all of the above.
Yeah.
Griff stalked my way, closing the distance between us in a single stride. Then his mouth was on mine, sending a flutter to my heart and a trembling to my knees. He claimed me. One sweep of his tongue and those words he'd told Skylar raced through my body. She's mine. He was mine, too. It was dark outside by the time we emerged from the bedroom. As promised, Griffin had delivered on his orgasm before dinner. 3, actually. Are we calling in for food? I opened my fridge. Or do you want cheese and crackers?
Pizza.
He wrapped an arm around my shoulders, his bare chest hot against my back. Then he closed the fridge.
Definitely pizza.
I sagged against him. Are we going to talk about earlier?
Probably should.
He murmured against my hair. We're not really casual, are we? He shifted, loosening his arm so he could turn me to face him, those piercing blue eyes seared into mine.
No, we are not.
Okay. That word seemed too small for this. I'd say okay to a latte, to a glass of champagne. Not to Griffin proposing, well, whatever it was he was proposing, nothing at the moment, but the promise of a future needed more than a simple okay.
You good with that?
Yes, another word, too small. Or maybe it was the perfect word. The two of us had started with a yes, whispered into his ear as we'd come together in the back of his truck.
I want to take you to dinner,
he declared.
On a date.
All right. My head was spinning. Tonight?
No.
He grinned and dug his phone from his jeans pocket. After tapping the screen a few times, he pressed it to his ear. My phone rang in the living room, so I brushed past Griffin as he ordered pizza and hurried to the floor where I'd dropped my purse earlier. I found my personal phone first, but it had been dead for days. I kept digging until I had my work phone in hand. The station's number flashed. Shit. Hello, I answered.
Hi, Chief,
Mitch said, his voice tight. There was no smile. What's going on?
Got a call from Frank Nigel.
My heart galloped. Frank would only call if there was an emergency. He'd probably tried my personal phone, and when I hadn't answered, he'd called the station. What happened?
It's Covey. He's at the hospital.
Chapter 16. Winslow. I'm going to move in with you, I told Pops, his hand sandwiched between mine. He scoffed.
No, you're not.
I don't like that you were alone.
I wasn't alone. I had Frank.
I shook my head. It's not the same. Because had Frank not needed to borrow a wrench, this entire situation might have turned out differently.
I'm fine.
You had a heart attack.
A mild heart attack.
He tried to pry his hand free, but I wasn't letting go. Not yet. I frowned. Semantics. Pops sighed.
I love you, Winnie.
I love you too. My chin began to quiver. It had been a long night of sitting in this chair and my emotions were frazzled.
Don't cry.
I nodded and swallowed the lump in my throat. There would be crying, lots and lots of crying, but I'd save it for when I was home alone. Pops was the only family I had left. Dad had been an only child. Mom had been two and her parents had passed away years ago. There weren't aunts and uncles and cousins who'd take me in for the holidays, who'd tell me they loved me. Pops was it, and this heart attack was a brutal reminder that he wouldn't always be here. I'd spent most of last night watching him sleep. He looked so small in this hospital bed. The grayish-blue gown and the beige walls bleached the color from his face. The fluorescent lights brought out every line, every wrinkle. Life was destined to end, but I wasn't ready to lose Pops. I wouldn't ever be ready. The tears flooding my eyes didn't care that he wanted me to suck it up. One streaked across each cheek, leaving twin trails.
Winnie, I'm okay.
I let go of his hand to dry my face. I know.
Like the doctor said, it's time to clean up my diet and reduce stress.
Pops was in such great shape for his age. He wasn't overweight and didn't get out of breath on our after-dinner walks. But I guess that didn't matter to his clogged arteries. His cholesterol was too high and he had a high-pressure job. It would be easier for you at home if you had help to keep up the house. Pfft, he waved it off.
The house isn't a stress, but...
But what? He studied the ceiling, his head sinking deeper into the pillows behind his shoulders.
Maybe it's time for me to retire.
You love being the mayor.
I sure do, sweetheart. I sure do.
He gave me a sad smile.
But I'm old, and being mayor is stressful. I feel like maybe I've done exactly what I needed to do. I've brought in the next generation to run this town, you included.
I sniffled, catching another tear before it could fall. Let's start with your diet. I'm not ready for a new boss yet. He chuckled.
Deal.
Good morning. A knock came at the door as a doctor stepped into the room. She wasn't the same doctor who'd been here last night when Griffin and I had arrived, but I knew her face. Hi, I'm Talia Eden. Hi, I straightened, standing to shake her hand. I'm Winslow Covington. It's nice to meet you. Her blue eyes were the same bright blue color as her brother's. Talia was as beautiful as Griffin was handsome. Her rich brown hair was pulled into a long ponytail that swished between her shoulder blades as she walked over to Pops's bedside. How are you feeling today, Covey?
Good.
She swung a stethoscope from around her neck and fitted it against his skin, under the collar of his gown. Deep breath. He followed her orders as she delivered them until she was finished with her checkup.
How long do I have, Doc? 3 months? 6?
That's not funny, I scolded. Pops grinned.
I'll be fine.
All of his vitals are strong, Talia said. Have you had any more chest pain?
Nope,
Pops answered. I'm going to keep you here for the day, she told him, just to monitor everything. But if everything looks good by tomorrow morning, we'll send you home. He nodded.
All right.
Do either of you have any questions for me? She asked. Pops shook his head. I raised my hand.
Oh, Lord.
Pops mumbled with an eye roll. Questions are my specialty, and I asked them without shame. The first four had been in my head since arriving at the hospital last night. They came out of my mouth in a stream of word vomit. How do we prevent this from happening again? Is there medication he can take? Last night, the doctor mentioned diet changes. Do you have a list of foods to avoid? Talia didn't even blink. She listened to them all and immediately answered each one. I'll have the nurse bring in some pamphlets. They are fairly generic, but there are some good websites listed that provide much more information in detail. Thank you. You're welcome, she smiled. It was nice to finally meet you. You too. Talia walked to the door, and the moment she opened it, two angry male voices drifted in from the hallway. She cleared her throat, and the voices stopped. Pops and I shared a look. We knew both of those voices. I followed Talia to the hallway, finding Griffin standing just outside the door. His arms were crossed and his eyes narrowed. Fury radiated off that wide chest as he glared down the hallway to where Frank was walking away. What's going on? Why is Frank leaving? Frank disappeared through the door to the stairwell without a backward glance. Let it go, Griff, Talia said.
It's not okay.
Griff shook his head.
He undermined you. He went to your boss.
What? I looked between the two of them, waiting for the explanation neither was giving. Why would Frank go to Talia's boss? Please drop it. She walked over and put her arm on his shoulder. I appreciate you getting riled up on my behalf, but it's not necessary. Griff's jaw clenched. Talia laughed and punched his bicep. I'll see you later.
Fine,
he mumbled. Bye, Winslow. Thanks for everything, I said, waving as she walked down the hallway toward the nurse's station. When she was out of earshot, I stepped closer to Griffin. What's wrong?
Frank found out that Talia was going to be Covey's doctor today, so he went to her boss and requested someone else.
What? Talia seemed perfectly competent. Young, but how many people thought the same about me in my position as chief? Why would he do that?
Because he's an asshole? I don't know. While she was in there, he got in my face, told me she wasn't qualified to be his doctor.
I don't understand. Why would he think that?
This is Talia's first year of residency. She got out of med school and the senior physicians here agreed to bring her on, get her the experience necessary. Because unlike Frank, they realize that if they don't bring in some new doctors, there won't be anyone to take their place when they retire. Talia knows and loves the community. She's smart. She's a good doctor.
You don't have to defend her to me. I stepped closer and put my hand on his forearm. Frank was wrong to do that. He uncrossed his arms, snaking one around my waist to pull me close.
I just don't want you to think that having her as Covey's doctor would put him at risk. She knows that she has things to learn. She'll call for help if she's in over her head.
I'm not worried.
Sorry.
He blew out a long breath and wrapped his other arm around me.
How are you holding up?
Tired, I yawned. As I leaned into his chest, giving him my weight, exhaustion crept through my bones like it had been waiting on the floor, ready to weave its way up my legs like a vine around a tree trunk. I breathed him in, taking comfort from that smell. You smell good. He'd showered this morning, and his clean soap lingered on his skin. I probably smelled like antibacterial hand sanitizer and hospital air. They're going to keep Pops here until tomorrow.
Why don't you head home? Get some rest.
That's my plan. I wanted to wait and hear from the doctor, Talia, first. He held me for a few long moments and I closed my eyes, letting him be my strength. At the rattle of an IV pole's wheels, I pulled away. A man in a hospital gown and robe emerged from his room next door in slippered feet. Want to say hi to Pops? I asked.
Definitely.
He clamped my hand in his, holding it tight like he had last night, like he knew I needed it. When we'd arrived, Pops had been in the emergency room. After the doctors had felt confident that the heart attack had passed, they'd whisked him away for a series of tests. It had taken hours, and Griffin had stayed by my side in the waiting room, holding my hand through every minute. Frank had stayed too, and whatever animosity the two of them had for each other, they'd put away for the night. Clearly, the truce had ended sometime after they'd settled Pops into an overnight room, and I'd insisted Griffin go home.
Hey, Covey.
Griffin didn't let go of my hand as we walked into the room. He just used his other one to shake Pops' hand.
How are you feeling today? Better. I'm in good hands with your sister as my doctor. I couldn't agree more,
Griff said. I moved to sit on the edge of the bed by my grandfather's feet, but the minute my butt touched the white blanket, Pops pointed to the door.
Out. Go. Now.
He snapped his fingers. After you eat your breakfast. He scowled, and when I didn't budge, he knew I wasn't going to be swayed. I wanted to stick around to help with his meal, and hopefully Frank would come back. I wanted to find out why he was so opposed to Talia. It didn't make sense, and I didn't want him putting unnecessary doubts in Pops's head either.
You guys need me to bring you anything?
Griffin asked. No. I yawned again.
Go home, Winnie,
Pops pleaded.
I'm fine.
I will soon, I promised.
I'm going to get out of the way so you can get some rest, Covey.
Griffin clapped a hand on my grandpa's shoulder.
Glad you're doing okay. Me too,
Pops said. I'll walk you out. I stood from the bed on heavy legs and went with Griffin to the hallway.
Don't stay too long.
He touched the freckles on my nose. I won't. I'm going to head home and shower and take a power nap.
Then you're going to work before coming back here.
I cocked my head. Am I really that predictable?
Yes.
He bent to kiss my forehead.
Call me later.
I will. I waited as he walked down the hallway, disappearing through the same door where Frank had bolted earlier. When it closed behind him, I gave myself a moment to feel worn down. 3 heartbeats, 4. Then the sound of footsteps forced me to turn around. Hey, Frank. I didn't force cheer into my voice because, well, he'd irritated me. I was grateful that he'd found Pops on the couch, that when Pops had told him he was having chest pains, he hadn't delayed or waited to see if they'd pass. He'd simply loaded my grandfather into his car and driven him to the hospital. But did he have to cause drama today? He read the irritation on my face. I was too tired to do a decent job disguising it.
Griffin told you I asked for another doctor besides Talia, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Why? We met with her and she seems quite capable.
She's not a real doctor.
She's a resident.
Which is basically an intern. Don't you want him to have the best?
Of course I do. But I was also trusting the hospital to know how to appropriately handle staffing. It was the same respect I appreciated with my own position.
Then don't let the Edens fool you. I don't know what you've got going on with Griffin.
Frank spat his name.
Just be careful. Stay on guard.
I blinked. On guard? Against what? Frank glanced over his shoulder, making sure we were alone. Then he inched closer and lowered his voice.
Griffin's worked his way through plenty of women in this town and outside.
I frowned. This was not something I needed to think about today, or ever. But before I could tell Frank that was my problem, not his, he kept talking.
Briggs beat his wife. That's why she left him.
The wheels of my mind screeched to a stop. What?
She was Rain's best friend. It took her a long time to confess that he was abusive. She came over one night crying, told Rain everything. The next day, she was gone.
Gone? Where?
I don't know, Winnie. She left. It was a long time ago, but that's why I'm telling you to be careful. Maybe she left him and needed to sever all connections to Quincy. But Rain was devastated. She lost her best friend, and there was nothing she could do to Briggs.
I pinched the bridge of my nose. Anything else?
Other than the fact that he's losing his damn mind and no one seems to care that he drives around town with rifles in his truck window? No.
So Griffin and his family weren't the only ones who'd noticed Briggs's dementia. I kept my mouth shut because it wasn't my business. Frank put his hand on my shoulder.
How are you holding up?
I'm all right. Tired.
How about you head on home? I'll stick with Covey for a while.
Are you sure?
Of course. But maybe charge your phone so I can actually get a hold of you if something happens.
I nodded. As of last night, I vowed to never let that phone go dead again. The two of us walked into Pops's room, and after a long hug goodbye, I left him with Frank and headed for the parking lot. Except the moment I slid behind the wheel, my brain decided to go into hyperdrive. There'd be no napping, not after what Frank had just told me. Was Frank just out to create drama today? Or had Briggs abused his wife? Griff had been so forthcoming about Briggs's dementia. Why wouldn't he mention anything about Briggs's ex-wife? Unless maybe Griff didn't know. Depending on when Briggs had been married, that might have been when Griffin was a little kid. But Briggs was the only person who lived anywhere near Indigo Ridge. His mental health was deteriorating, and if he had a history of violence, well, that changed everything. I pulled out of the parking lot and drove to the station. Word around Quincy had traveled fast, and I was inundated with questions about Pops when I walked through the door. Janice was practically in a panic. After assuring everyone that he was fine, I retreated to my office, where I closed the door and logged on to my computer. Pulling a background check on Briggs Eden felt like a betrayal. My skin crawled as it loaded and I squirmed in my seat. But the moment the report appeared on my screen, I began sifting through the information. Birth date, addresses, phone numbers, known relations, and then the criminal record. It was empty. No domestic abuse, no speeding tickets, not even a parking ticket in the past 10 years. I closed the screen and stared, unfocused, at my desk. Huh. Maybe Frank had it wrong. I picked up a pen for no reason other than to tap it. The steady click, like the sound of my fifth-grade piano teacher's metronome, grounded my thoughts. It let me block out the noise and just think. If there had only been a minor scuffle, no actual abuse, then it was unlikely the police would have been notified to arrest him. Or maybe if Briggs's wife had only told Rain. Maybe she'd kept it secret, fearing for her safety. I grabbed my phone from my purse and pulled up Griffin's name, my finger hovering over the screen. But I set it aside. This was his family, his life. If he didn't know about Briggs, this was not how I wanted him to find out. Not from Frank's gossiping. If he did know, then there was a reason he hadn't told me about it. Tonight, we could talk about it tonight. After I made a visit. Guilt plagued me as I drove out of town. A knot formed in my belly the closer and closer I got toward the ranch. By the time I turned onto the gravel road that led to Briggs's cabin, I was sweating, even with the air conditioner blasting. Griffin had known for a while now that I'd planned on talking to his uncle. I'd told him as much the day he'd brought me Lily Green's boots. So why did I feel like I was breaking his trust? He couldn't come along. This was an official visit. This was me doing my job. I swallowed my doubts as I parked beside Briggs's truck. The spot where the fire had been on Sunday was now a circle of black grass. In its center remained a pile of gray ash. The charred limbs had been hauled away. Even days later, I swore I could smell the scent of burning pine. I walked to the cabin, stepping beneath the overhang. Before I could knock, it flew open and Briggs Eden's broad frame crowded the threshold. Would Griffin look like him in 30 years? They had the same nose, the same shape to their lips. But Briggs had a rough edge, maybe from living alone for so many years. Hi, I held out a hand. I'm Winslow Covington. We met the other day. I came up here with Griffin. Briggs's gaze dropped to my outstretched hand, then back to my face.
Who?
Winslow Covington. I'm Quincy's new chief of police. There wasn't a flicker of recognition. I was up here the day of the fire.
Oh, sorry.
He shook his head, then fit his large hand over mine.
I just woke up from a nap, and I'm a bit fuzzy. You know how that goes.
Sure.
Come on in.
He stepped back to wave me inside.
Winslow, was it?
That's right.
Can I get you some water?
That would be lovely, thanks. He moved to the kitchen and pulled two unmatched glasses from a cabinet. The cabin smelled of bacon grease and fried eggs. My stomach squeezed. I hadn't eaten since lunch yesterday. A cast iron skillet sat on the range. There was a mason jar on the kitchen counter filled with picked wildflowers. The main room was one wide open space with the kitchen and a dining table to one side. Opposite was a living room with two couches and a TV angled on a stand in the corner. The coffee table had two books stacked neatly on the surface. The DVDs below the television were arranged in a perfect line. There was a bookshelf against the wall, but unlike the rest of the house, its shelves were chaos. That bookshelf looked like it belonged in my home or office, not this tidy cabin. There was a bundle of rolled newspapers, scattered paperbacks, a hammer that looked new, a jigsaw puzzle, a jar of pens. The clutter was senseless. Where other people had a junk drawer, Briggs had junk shelves. There was a pile of unopened bills, a pocket knife that had seen better days, and a purse. Why would he have a purse? And why did it look so familiar? I took a step closer, inspecting the smooth camel leather with exposed chocolate stitching at the seams. This is beautiful. I lifted it from the shelf, turning to hold it up to Briggs. Your wife or girlfriend has exquisite taste.
I'm not married, he chuckled, bringing me over a glass of water. Not anymore. My wife left me ages ago. We had some problems. Turns out being a bachelor suited me just fine.
I smiled and sipped my water. It wasn't like I could ask him if he'd beat her and that was the reason they'd had problems. Today's visit wasn't to confirm or deny Frank's gossip. Briggs appeared lucid. Today was to feel him out, and maybe find out why he had this purse.
Did you make this, then? Are you a leather craftsman?
Lord, no. I'm too impatient to master a craft. I was built for manual labor.
His face changed as he chuckled. The rough edges softened. The crinkles at his eyes deepened.
I found that on a hike around Indigo Ridge. Thought it was too nice to leave on the trail.
There wasn't a smidge of dirt on the bag. Either he'd cleaned it after finding it, or... I didn't want to think of the alternative. I didn't want to think that this purse hadn't been found, but kept as a souvenir.
Would you mind if I looked at the lining and the inside? I asked.
Go for it. A phone chime came from the back of the cabin. Let me go get that.
Of course. I waited for him to leave, then took a quick video of the purse with my phone, swiveling it around to get a shot at all angles. The purple silk lining was as clean and flawless as the exterior, and it smelled like new leather. The front flap was monogrammed with an H. The inside was empty except for a wallet tucked at the bottom. A square seafoam green wallet with a gold zipper. A wallet as feminine as this cabin was masculine. I plucked it from the purse. The zipper was open. Inside was a folded $20 bill and a driver's license. Lily Green's driver's license.
Chapter 17. Griffin.
Are you decent?
Knox called from the front door. No, I lied. He came inside anyway.
Are you alone?
Yeah.
Damn, I was hoping to meet the chief. I'm feeling left out.
Mateo hasn't met her either. I nodded to the plastic container in his hand.
What's that?
Breakfast. He set it on the counter before heading to the coffee pot.
Remember at Christmas when that baker from California stayed at the hotel? We've been emailing, exchanging recipes. I talked her into giving me her cinnamon roll recipe. I made some early this morning, took a batch to Mom and Dad's, thought I'd drop some here too.
Thanks. I popped the lid off the container, and my mouth watered at the scent of cinnamon and bread and sugar. Each roll was as big as my face. Knox had brought two, probably thinking Wynne was here.
You look about as tired as I feel, he said.
I am,
I yawned. The coffee I'd been drinking since 4 hadn't kicked in yet. I hadn't slept well last night, mostly tossing and turning. Each time my arm would touch the empty side of the bed, I'd wake, worrying that Wynne had left after another nightmare. Then I'd remember that she'd stayed at the hospital, and not long after I'd fall back asleep, it would happen again. Finally, as the faint rays of dawn had crept through my bedroom windows, I decided to get up and work in the office.
How's Covey doing?
Better. Wynne stayed at the hospital again last night. Against my pleading texts for her to sleep in a bed, not that damn chair. But if I was in her position, I would have done the same. Sounds like Covey should get to head home today.
Glad to hear it.
Glad to say it. I didn't want that sort of loss for Wynne.
What's new?
Knox asked, taking a sip of coffee.
Feels like I haven't seen you in ages.
You sat beside me at the rodeo.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. Since Wynne had invaded my life, she'd been the constant focus. Before her, I'd head to the restaurant and let Knox cook me dinner once or twice a week.
You're serious about this one, aren't you?
He asked. I am.
Damn, he blinked. Thought you'd deny it.
Not with Wynne.
Remember that time when we were, what, 12 and 10? We made a pact to never get married?
I remember. I chuckled. Girls are gross, boys rule.
We were going to build a treehouse and live in it forever.
Knox laughed.
Then we hit puberty, and the treehouse plans were torched.
We'd both been fairly popular at Quincy High, and neither of us had gone long without a girlfriend. Though Knox had always dated more seriously, I'd been a typical teenage boy, in it for the sex. Hell, that's how it had been my whole life. That's how it had started with Wynne. But if there was a woman to steal for the future, it was her. I'd thought there wouldn't be time to add another person, another commitment to my life. But being with her wasn't work. She fit seamlessly. I wasn't getting any younger. My family was big and loud and exhausting more often than not. But the idea of building my own legacy, having my own children, grew more and more appealing each day. I shook my head, getting ahead of where we were. First, we'd start with introductions to my family, and a date. She deserved a first date. I'll bring Wynne down to dinner, tonight if she's up to it. That would be great. Knox went to the island and slid onto a stool. The normal stubble on his face had grown so thick it was almost a beard. His hair was longer than it had been in years, curling at the nape of his neck and as shaggy as mine. With the black tattoos on his biceps peeking out from beneath the sleeves of his t-shirt, he looked more like the bikers who rolled through Quincy each summer on their way to Sturgis than a successful businessman and chef. Though I guess that's probably what people thought of me, too. I wore dirty jeans and scuffed boots to run this multi-million-dollar ranch. Mom and Dad told me about Briggs this morning, Knox said. Sounds bad. It is, I sighed. And the worst part is how fast it's happening. He's been coming into the restaurant for lunch 2-3 times a week. Seems totally fine. I think most of the time he is. But that doesn't matter if during the bad times he tries to burn the goddamn ranch down.
Agreed. Dad said he was going to make some calls today.
It's the right thing to do. You'd do it for me.
I would.
Knox nodded.
Just like you'd do it for me.
I waved it off, not wanting to talk about this today, not wanting to think about my brother going through something like this. Knox and I were the closest in age. At only 2 years apart, the two of us had been inseparable as kids. We'd explored the ranch, building forts and hunting invisible monsters with our BB guns. We'd both been disgusted with our parents for having three girls, and by the time Mateo was born, 9 years younger than me, we hadn't played much with him as a young boy. The times we had, it was as a babysitter. I loved Mateo, but my bond with Knox went deeper. He was the one I'd called my senior year when I'd gotten too drunk at a keg party and needed a ride. He'd called me to bail him out of jail after getting tangled in a bar fight years ago. A woman at the bar had been arguing with her boyfriend, and when the boyfriend had backhanded her, Knox had taught the son of a bitch a lesson. Gone were the drunken nights. Anymore, the two of us would sit on my porch and have a few beers. Sometimes he'd crash here instead of driving to his place in town. Are you working today? I asked.
Always. You?
Every day. Jim, Connor, and the other hands had already stopped by to check in for the day. With all of them out working, I'd decided to stick closer to home. Mostly, I wanted to be around if Wynne came out.
Speaking of work, Knox drained the rest of his coffee. I'd better get going. Prep work is waiting. We've been slammed lately.
That's a good thing, right?
He grinned. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Knox's dream was to run his own restaurant. He'd always loved being in the kitchen, working beside Mom, soaking up everything she could tell him. When he'd announced that he was going to culinary school, none of us had been surprised. I'll be in for dinner, with or without Wynne. Maybe after, if you can get away, we can head to Willie's for a beer.
You're on.
He stood, and with a wave, headed for the door. I finished my own cup of coffee, then found my work boots and went to the barn. My plan was to spend an hour or two outside, then take a shower, and if I hadn't heard from Wynne yet, head to town. This was the longest I'd gone without seeing her in a week. With all she had happening with Covey, I was worried. She hadn't replied to the last message I'd sent her this morning to check in. She was probably busy getting her grandfather out of the hospital and to his home. But still, I worried. Mom had told me once that we worried for those we loved most. For Wynne, I'd always worry. It was something I'd have to figure out. get a handle on. She had a dangerous job, and though she wasn't out on nightly patrols, there were times when she'd be on the streets with the wackos. It was the reason I'd stayed awake on the 4th. I'd known she was out, and that had kept me up until she'd come over. Those worries were a constant rattle in my head. Even an hour doing physical chores in the barn didn't clear my mind like it usually did. I was in the middle of cleaning out Jupiter's stall when the crunch of tires came from the driveway. I strode into the sunshine, and the knot in my chest loosened as Wynn stepped out of the unmarked Explorer she drove for work. "Hey, baby," I walked right to her and pulled her into my arms. "How are you?" She stiffened, shying away.
"Fine."
"Oh, sorry." I brushed at my sweaty chest, and the bits of hay stuck to my t-shirt. "How'd it go at the hospital? How's Covey?"
"He's okay. Home and settled for the moment."
She met my gaze for a brief second, then her blue irises dropped to my shoulder. She stood stiff, her forehead furrowed. There were dark circles under her eyes, and the normal flush to her cheeks was missing. "Did you sleep at all?"
"Not really."
She shook her head, then squared her shoulders and straightened.
"I need to talk to you about something."
"Okay," I drawled. "About?"
"Your uncle."
"Briggs? Did something happen?" She nodded.
"I'm going to bring him in for questioning."
"Questioning? For what?"
"I went to see him yesterday."
I blanked, trying to wrap my head around this. I'd been worried about her, thinking she was at the hospital with Covey, thinking about her at home alone trying to get some sleep. But she'd been on the ranch. My ranch. "You went to the cabin yesterday after the hospital. Without me?"
"I told you weeks ago I was going to talk to him."
"Yeah, but you could have warned me. Weren't we at the point where we shared this sort of thing?"
"I needed to do this alone."
"Alone?
What the hell?"
I took a step back and crossed my arms over my chest. "Why?"
"There's a rumor that he has a history of violence toward women."
"A rumor?" I scoffed. "Now I get it. You were listening to Frank's poison. There was no abuse. Briggs's wife left him because she was a spoiled bitch. She thought he'd take over the ranch and get the money. When she realized he had no interest in running this place and was going to let my dad take it all, she skipped town. With all of his money, by the way. And before she left, she decided to fuck up his reputation first." Everyone who knew Briggs knew the truth. He would never have hit his wife. He'd adored her, and when she'd left him, it had broken his heart. "You should have come to me first," I snapped, "for the truth." Wynn tensed.
"I'm coming to you now."
"To what? To tell me that you're going to haul my uncle in for questioning on a marital dispute from decades ago?"
"I'm bringing him in to talk about Lily Green and Harmony Hart."
My heart stopped. "Why?"
"When I was at the cabin, I found a purse and a wallet. The purse was Harmony's. Her mother confirmed it for me yesterday afternoon. The wallet was Lily's."
"You searched my uncle's cabin." She might as well have slapped me in the face.
"No, he invited me in, and I saw the purse on his bookshelf."
The bookshelf that was always so clustered and full of junk, I hadn't really noticed what he'd kept on it. The contents changed constantly, and the only times I paid it much attention were when I'd go to the cabin and find the shelves organized.
"The wallet was inside," she said. "He gave me permission to look."
Was that supposed to make me feel like she hadn't betrayed me? I shook my head, my molars grinding together so tight my teeth hurt. "I can't believe you'd do this."
"I'm doing my job."
"You're taking Frank motherfucking Nigel's opinion over mine." She flinched.
"No, I'm not.
I told you once that the bastard hates my family. I've known him my entire life, and he's always treated me like shit beneath his shoe." If she was going to get pulled into the rumor mill, then she might as well get some facts to balance out the bullshit. "Did you know the reason he's such a prick to Talia is because he hit on her when she was 18 and she told him to fuck off?" Wynn blinked.
No.
"Or how he goes into the coffee shop when Lila is the only one working and makes her feel uncomfortable. Did he tell you how she's had to excuse herself into the back room twice to call Knox to come over so she's not alone with Frank?"
"No,
she shook her head.
"What? Frank? I've known him my whole life." Maybe he's a flirt, but he's harmless.
So is Briggs. She opened her mouth, then closed it, taking a moment to weigh her words.
I just wanted to give you a heads up.
A little too late, don't you think? While I'd been worried about her yesterday, thinking she was distraught over Covey's heart attack, she'd been on my property, talking to my uncle when she knew we had family shit happening with him at the moment.
I didn't have to come here at all.
Her expression hardened.
By all rights, I shouldn't have told you, but because of our relationship, I didn't want you to hear it from anyone else.
Our relationship? I clenched my jaw. A relationship that I'd thought was serious enough that she'd come to me before believing Frank's bullshit. Wynn held up her hands.
I need to go.
Fine. I refused to look at her as she returned to the SUV, reversed away, and disappeared down the road. When the sound of her engine was drowned by distance, I kicked a rock. Fuck. This was going to be a mess. A real fucking mess. What if Briggs said the wrong thing? Why would he have Harmony Hart's purse and Lily Green's wallet? I wouldn't get the chance to ask him first. Wynn was probably already on her way to the cabin, and the minute she brought him into the station, the entire town would know. One of the officers at the station would talk, and before my family and I had answers, Briggs would have earned yet another black mark on his reputation that would last the rest of his days. Just like the one his ex had delivered. Decades later, there were those who still believed he'd beat her, and people like Frank, those who didn't like that our family was so ingrained in Quincy, only made it worse. The rumor mill was about to spin out of control. Fuck! I shouted, then spun and jogged for the house. I swiped my keys off the counter and hustled to my truck. Its wheels left a trail of dust as I sped along the gravel road to Mom and Dad's. We could have talked at the cabin. Wynn could have questioned him there with one of us present. Why was she insisting on dragging him into town? Briggs had most likely found the purse and wallet on one of his hikes, much like Lily's boots. The day I'd taken those to her office, she'd told me she was going to talk to Briggs, as she should. But was it really necessary to bring him into the station? I stomped the gas pedal. If Briggs was having an episode, if he wasn't as sharp as he normally was, what would he say to her? It felt like she was handing the man a shovel and telling him to dig his own grave, all because she had questions to ask. Her damn questions. Wynn had been so against calling Lily's death a suicide, but we all knew it was suicide. The whole town. So why wouldn't she just let it go? This was nothing more than a case of lost and found. A purse and a wallet. Hell, that purse had probably been out on a trail for years collecting dust and rain. If I begged, would she take Briggs to the main house? Could we have this conversation at Mom and Dad's kitchen table where he'd feel more comfortable? I shifted and dug my phone from my back pocket, bringing up her name. The call went straight to voicemail. Shit. I drove faster. The pit in my stomach doubled in size. Maybe the reason I was so pissed wasn't because Wynn was going to talk to Briggs. It was because I was fucking terrified that maybe there was a reason why. She wouldn't haul him to the station if there wasn't something wrong, right? What had been in that purse? Why hadn't Briggs turned it in after Harmony Hart's death? Why had he kept Lily Green's wallet? He knew where those girls had died. Fuck, if he'd had something to do with those deaths. No, those poor girls had killed themselves. The former chief had investigated. Harmony Hart had been depressed. She'd been struggling with mood swings, according to her closest friends. Her death had nothing to do with my uncle, my kind, gentle uncle who was losing his clear mind. Mom was in the yard on her knees, pulling weeds from a flower bed as I skidded to a stop beside Dad's Silverado. She must have realized something was wrong, because she stood, tearing off her garden gloves and tossing them on the lawn as she met me by the porch.
What's wrong?
Where's Dad?
He's watching the news. You're scaring me, Griffin. Is it your brothers or sisters?
I shook my head. No, it's Briggs.
Oh, no,
she breathed.
Come in.
I followed her inside. Dad was in his recliner in the living room with the news on the TV, his glasses on and the newspaper in his lap.
Hi, son.
His forehead furrowed as he looked between me and Mom. He kicked the footrest of the chair closed and sat straight.
What's going on?
I planted my hands on my hips. We've got trouble.
Chapter 18. Winslow. Can I get you a cup of coffee or water? I asked Briggs.
No, but thanks.
He shook his head, glancing around my office. His large frame consumed the chair across from my desk. It had looked just as tiny the day Griffin had sat there, too. I appreciate you coming down here with me today. The smile I sent him was infused with as much warmth as I could muster. Briggs motioned to the purse and wallet on my desk.
So you want to talk about these?
Yes. Both articles were sealed in evidence bags. When I'd arrived at Briggs's cabin an hour ago, I'd simply asked if I could have them for an investigation. He'd agreed, saving me the trouble of requesting a warrant. Then I'd asked if he'd come to the station with me to discuss how he'd come upon them. Again, he'd agreed. He was focused and sharp today, like yesterday. When I'd knocked on his door this morning, he'd joked about having more police visits in the past week than he'd had his entire life. It was easy to see why Griffin loved his uncle so much. Even riding in my unmarked Explorer, in the front passenger seat, because while I had concerns, I wasn't going to stuff him in the back, he'd talked to me the entire drive to town, asking me questions about how I was liking Quincy and telling me stories about his life spent on the ranch. He seemed like a gentleman, a person who lived alone because he was content with his own company. A brother and a proud uncle, most of the stories he'd told had included one or more of his nieces or nephews. It felt wrong to have him here, to be discussing ugly things. Or maybe it felt that way because of Griffin's reaction. Would you mind if I recorded this conversation? I asked, reaching for the handheld recorder beside my phone.
Not at all.
Thank you. I put the recorder between us, then hit the red button. After a quick introduction, stating our names and the date, I described the purse and wallet for the record. You said that you found both of these articles while hiking, correct? Briggs nodded.
I did.
Where were you hiking?
Indigo Ridge. I've hiked around that area my whole life. It's a favorite spot. The views from the top are magnificent.
I bet they are. Maybe one day I'll make it to the top myself.
I'll take you.
A genuine offer. I'd like that. A genuine reply. If Briggs took me hiking, I doubted he'd push me off the cliff. Wouldn't there be a twist in my belly if I feared this man was a murderer? Wouldn't there be a nervous zing through my veins? There was nothing. My instincts said that something about Lily Green's death wasn't right. Yet as I sat across from a man who shouldn't have had her wallet, a man who lived the closest to the place where she'd died, not a single cell in my body warned that he was dangerous. Yet I wasn't paid to rely solely on instincts. I was here because we followed the evidence. The trail had led me here. I'd keep going until I reached a roadblock. Briggs, I'm sure you know this, but there have been 3 women found at the base of Indigo Ridge.
Yes, it's awful. These kids, they're just kids.
Heartfelt sympathy filled his voice. It is awful. A crease formed between his graying eyebrows.
You don't think I had something to do with it, do you? I never even knew those girls.
Tell me more about how you found the purse. He cocked his head, staring at the object in question.
I thought you wanted the purse because it was stolen or something. Same with the wallet. Figured you'd tell me when we got here. I get it now. You think I had something to do with those girls, don't you?
Instead of answering, I leaned forward, bracing my elbows on the edge of the desk. When did you find the purse?
I'm no killer. He gritted his teeth, not answering my question. I'm losing my mind. I'm losing myself. That's a humbling realization for a man, to know that there's not a damn thing I can do to stop it. I'm facing my own mortality, Ms. Covington, not murdering innocent girls.
The color in his cheeks turned pink. His shoulders stiffened. Let's just talk about the purse.
Whose was it?
Harmony Hart. He dropped his gaze.
Was that the woman Harrison found, or Griffin?
Griffin, I answered. When did you find this purse?
What day is it?
Wednesday.
Sunday.
That was the day of the fire. You were sure, this past Sunday?
Yes, I went for a hike early that morning. Came home, put them on my bookshelf to sort out later. Went outside to do some yard work, and, well, you were there.
Then he'd had an episode. Was the wallet inside when you found it?
No.
Where did you find the wallet?
Same place on Sunday. Both were together.
Harmony Heart had died years before Lily Green. Those pieces shouldn't have been together. Unless Lily Green had kept a purse like Harmony Heart's. I'd assumed at first that the H monogram had been for Harmony, but maybe it was the designer's logo. When I'd gone to identify the purse, I'd started with Harmony's mother. When she'd recognized it, I hadn't cross-checked it with Melina Green. I'd be making a stop after taking Briggs home, and doing more research on the origin of this purse. Did you find the purse or wallet first? I asked.
The wallet. It was right in the middle of my usual trail. Nearly stepped on it.
Where was the purse?
In a bush about 30 feet away.
On the trail? He nodded.
Yes.
My mind was racing, possibilities and scenarios flashing like a strobe light. There was no reason that he should have found both articles so close together. Briggs could be lying, though his admission only made it more suspicious. A more believable lie would be that he'd found the purse years ago and the wallet more recently, both on completely different trails. Assuming it was the truth, why had they been together? Could this be part of the suicide pattern? Maybe one of the kids had started it as a symbol to leave something behind. But that didn't make sense at all. The purse was in too good condition if it truly was Harmony's. And after Lily, we'd all gone around the area looking for evidence. I'd spent hours up there searching for her shoes. The reason I hadn't found them was likely because Briggs had beaten me to it. But I hadn't found the purse or wallet either. Who else had been up on that ridge? Is your trail well known? I asked.
Not really.
Did you find the boots in the same area?
No, they were closer to my cabin in a field. I probably would have missed them, except they were by a cluster of wildflowers, and I stopped to pick a bundle.
I'd have to scout both locations. Maybe there was something else left behind. Maybe there was more. The trail where you found these, I gestured to the purse and wallet. Is it the trail that leads to the cliff, the one from the road?
No, they're separate. You can get to the cliff from my trail, but it's the long way around. There's a cut across to the one you're talking about that's about 200 yards from the cliff. I rarely take it because I head up higher.
Paths swirled like spaghetti noodles in my head as I tried to visualize what he was talking about. Is there a map that shows any of this?
No, but I could sketch one out.
I opened my desk drawer and pulled out a notepad and a pencil, then slid them over to Briggs. While he went about drawing the map, I studied his face. Was he guilty? Did he do this? I'd asked those questions before in different interrogation settings. Once, I'd questioned a man who'd been accused of raping a woman in an alley behind a downtown bar in Bozeman. He'd been so cooperative, seemingly so innocent, so distraught over what had happened because the victim had been an acquaintance from college. Yet he'd done it. He'd looked me in the face and sworn to me that he'd had nothing to do with it. It was my nature to believe there was good in most people, but I hadn't believed that son of a bitch for a moment. DNA had confirmed my instincts. Did he do this? In that bastard's case, yes. With Briggs? No. Maybe. I don't know. If there wasn't a doubt about his mental capacity, it would be a lot easier to decide. But what if he'd done something terrible and couldn't even remember doing it? What if he'd gone out hiking and run into a girl on the wrong path? What if he'd gotten violent with her? What if he'd gotten violent with his wife and Frank had been right, that he'd driven her away? Or what if Griffin was right about Frank and this was all just gossip spewed in a small town by enemies? The truth was probably somewhere in the middle, hidden for me to find. Briggs finished his sketch and handed me the notepad. The map was simple and concise. He'd circled the area where he'd found the purse and wallet. He'd marked where he'd found the boots. From how he'd drawn the map, there really was no reason that the girls would have gone on his trail. If they'd parked on the road and taken the same trail that I'd taken to look over the area, they shouldn't have even gotten close to where Briggs had found the purse and wallet. Unless he was lying. He'd had that wallet for days, allegedly. He'd heard about Lily Green's death. Why hadn't he immediately brought it in? Did you look through the wallet? I asked.
No, I was going to. Then I sort of forgot about it.
He rubbed the back of his neck.
After the fire.
The purse is in good condition, I pointed to the handbag. It doesn't look like it's been outside long.
Probably hasn't. Leather like that would be ruined in a spring rainstorm.
Either he'd had it longer than he'd claimed, or someone had put that purse on the mountain along with the wallet. Yes, both could be Lily's, but even then, she'd died early last month. We'd had rain showers since her death. That purse and the wallet should be in worse condition if they'd been outside since June. There was a chance they'd been sheltered from the worst of the elements, maybe shaded under a tree. Assuming the purse was Lily's, assuming she had taken the wrong trail, assuming that she'd tossed the purse and wallet aside before going to the cliff. Too many assumptions. Have you seen anyone hiking in that area lately? Briggs shook his head.
It's private property. Only person who regularly goes there is me.
You're sure? He locked his eyes with mine, and understanding crept into his gaze. If there was evidence of anything sinister, he'd be my primary suspect. He had the means, the opportunity. The only solid element missing, the key element, was motive. Trespassing was weak, but a possibility. Maybe he'd seen someone on his ranch and he'd gone into a rage. It was thin. I hated thin. It usually meant I was missing something. The uneasy noise in my head was beginning to scream so loud I wanted to plug my ears. What the fuck was going on? If Lily really had committed suicide, someone might have been with her that night. She'd had sex with someone. Briggs? That would explain why none of her friends had noticed a boyfriend. Maybe she'd been sneaking up to the mountains for an affair with a much older man. Maybe. There were too many maybes. But if he'd had her boots up there, it made sense why her feet hadn't been shredded. She'd been wearing them until, what? He'd pushed her? He'd tossed her over the edge? Can you tell me where you were the night of June 1st? I asked, hating the way his shoulders slumped.
Home.
Alone?
As far as I remember.
Were you doing anything? Reading? Texting? Movies? He met my eyes, and there was so much embarrassment in his face that my heart twisted.
I don't do much these days. I'm sure I was home, but I don't remember exactly what I was doing.
Fair enough. I gave him a sad smile. It's hard to remember specifics that long ago. He dropped his gaze to his lap. It was his relationship to Griffin that made me hurt for Briggs. It was the reason we were in my office and not an interrogation room with another officer as a witness. That's all the information I need for now. I stopped recording and locked the recorder away, then picked up my keys. I'll take you home now. He stood wordlessly and followed me out of the office and to the parking lot. There were no officers in the bullpen, only Officer Smith stationed at the door. I'd picked this hour specifically, not wanting there to be an audience when I brought Briggs in. The drive to the cabin was a stark contrast to our trip into town. Briggs kept his hands clasped tightly in his lap, like a pair of invisible handcuffs were clasped around his wrists. When I stopped in front of his house, he reached for the door, but hesitated, looking at me for the first time since we'd left the station.
I don't think I hurt those girls.
The uncertainty in his words was a knife to the heart. Lost for words, I had nothing to say as he shoved out of the cruiser and disappeared into his home. I stared at the cabin's closed door for a long moment. You never knew what happened inside the walls of a home unless you lived there. But in Briggs's case, I could guess he lived, preferred, a simple life. He was like his nephew in that way.
The urge to rush to Griffin, to have him wrap his arms around me and chase away this sick feeling, was so strong that when I drove to town, I had to keep both hands on the wheel to ensure I stayed on course. He was mad. I was angry. There'd be no comfort in his arms today. The station was still quiet when I returned. I sat at my desk and replayed the recording from my discussion with Briggs. Then I got to work. The purse and wallet were taken to be fingerprinted. Even with the recording, I made notes of exactly how my discussion with Briggs had come about and how I'd found the items in his home. Then I left to visit Melina Green at work. Melina was at the nurse's station when I arrived at the nursing home, smiling as she chatted with a coworker. Her smile fell when she spotted me. Melina recovered quickly, waving as I approached, but the damage to my feelings was done. I'd forever be the face of the worst day of her life. It was my burden to bear. She was getting back on her feet, and I was an unwelcome reminder of her pain. As time went on, there'd be